You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Record Rangers podcast. My name is Gavin Berry and I'm delighted to say once again I'm joined by the Daily Record's Andy Newport. Andy was in Perth on Sunday to watch Rangers beat St Johnstone 3-0. And Andy, for the first time in a long time on this podcast, I think I'm going to say Rangers are top of the league.
Yep, there's a couple of different dates you can go with.
I actually did this debate with Scott McDermott last week. Sorry to butt in, but he'd written in a piece, I think it was Kenny Miller's column, actually. Maybe he was doing Kenny Miller's column, they'd written 18 months, which took me aback because I thought it was 2 years, basically. When Rangers lost that Old Firm game, which you were at 3-0, it's fact, really, that's the last time Rangers were top. After a significant period of games,
It was the last time. The only other time had been that one. There was a game at the start of last season, around August time, where they were basically the Rangers played on the Saturday, Celtic played on the Sunday, so they were ahead for 24 hours. But in terms of when they both played the same number of games, and you know, you can say that Rangers were firmly in command of a title race, and you've got to go back to that, as you say, that Old Firm game 2 years ago. So it's been a long time coming for the Rangers support. You can sort of feel the release and the tension and the longing for that as soon as that Mohamed Diamandé goal went in up at Perth at the weekend. As soon as the goal goes in, there's an immediate roar of we shall not be moved. So the fans knew the significance of the moment, and you could see the players really got a lift from that. And as I say, the players and the fans really enjoyed the moment. So, you know, it's been, I think they'll find it's been a long time coming. They'll just be delighted that they're finally back leading a race with just 12 games to go. It's all to play for.
Yeah, because I was going to say that. I remember when we spoke on the podcast after Rangers had drawn 1-1 up at Pittodrie earlier this season, one of the only two games in the league that Philip Clement hasn't won. And Celtic had drawn at Motherwell the previous day, similar circumstances. And I think me, you and Scott spoke on the Monday. And that was one of the few times, you know, there had been a bit of criticism because they didn't take that opportunity to capitalise on Celtic slipping up. And we were kind of saying, you know, I was saying, you know, didn't the players had realised the significance of it? And, you know, and you and Scott were saying, well, somebody should have told them. No, it's been drummed into them. And yet yesterday, of course, it was much more significant. Yes, there was much more at stake, the chance to go top. You know, that Aberdeen game was obviously a bit earlier in Philip Clement's reign, so he was getting a wee bit more leeway. Yesterday, again, slow in the first sort of 20, 25 minutes, but you've got to take the pitch and everything into account. But was there a sense of that? I mean, you were in the ground. Did you get that feeling going, hang on, somebody better tell them there's a chance to go top here? Or
well, definitely, because after half an hour, I was starting to worry. I had a 1,000-word match report to write, and after half an hour, I hadn't taken any notes down because nothing had happened. So, it was. It did feel like there was a bit of a laboured start. You know, you often get that with these sort of Sunday midday kickoffs. You know, I think people are still sort of half asleep at that time, and it just did feel like everyone was just a bit still sort of like dozy, as if they're just 2 minutes out of their bed. But, you know, as soon as that Diamandé goal goes in, the game soon sort of livened up, and you know, there was obviously plenty going on in the second half. So, but, you know, yeah, I just think, as you say, you're right, the pitch, you know, the kickoff time, you know, the fact that St Johnstone, you know, just really weren't really looking to make too much of a game of it in terms of an attacking sense. They were quite happy just to sit in and protect their shape. It didn't make for the most free-flowing of occasions, but you know, I think that's what was impressed me so much about this team under Philippe Clement, is that these were perhaps games earlier on in the season under Michael Beale where the tension would have raised, the nervousness would have crept in, and you know, they would have just got away from the game plan, that would have got a wee bit erratic is what Clement's done with this team, is he just keeps them so focused, so calm, so composed, that even when things aren't going their way, games where they've fallen behind, they just keep doing the same thing, and eventually they know that if they keep creating chances, the chances will lead to goals. So, you know, it has been impressive in that sense, and I think you saw that again. You know, half an hour in, you're thinking, they've not created anything, but they know if they keep applying the pressure, the chance will come, and it did in pretty spectacular style.
Yeah, that's what I was actually going to say to you next. You know, while, you know, people at home and maybe the fans in the stand might be sort of getting a bit nervy and saying, come on, you know, we need to get this... I'm going to get this win that takes us top. I was going to say that to you. There's something controlled and disciplined. It all comes down to that focus that he's instilled, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable. Every interview we do now, the guys are just saying one game at a time, one game at a time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, it doesn't make our lives as journalists any easier trying to get a line out of the lads, but it's that, you know, drummed in message. It is the next game. We've tried several times to get Felipe Clement and his players to talk about, you know, winning the title, you know, what will it mean to the club, you know, what would it mean to him? And he just brushes it all off. They just want to, they're looking no further ahead than the next game, which is Hearts next Saturday, I think. So, you know, that is now their only focus, and it'll be like that all the way through at the end of the season. And, you know, if they keep on like as they are, they've got a great chance now of, you know, going and lifting this title. It's going to be, you know, still, I fully expect some more twists and turns to come. You know, they've obviously got two derbies still to play. You know, who knows what can happen in those. You know, Rangers haven't really sort of managed to lay a glove in Celtic so far in the two head-to-head. So there's a question mark still to be answered in that sense. But, you know, things are looking encouraging, more encouraging than Rangers fans could ever have dreamed of 4 months ago when, you know, the wheels really did come off the Michael Beale era, when, you know, the team just looked a shambles. It looked lost. It looked directionless. The players that brought in just didn't look good enough. And all of a sudden now you're looking at a team that, you know, could be eyeing a treble, could be eyeing, you know, going deep in the Europa League. So it's just, what a turnaround. I still struggle to get my head, just when I think back to all the pieces I was writing earlier on this season, when you could only draw the conclusion that the team was heading toward another failed season. And now look at where they are now. It's just a remarkable, remarkable turnaround.
I was actually saying that to Scott last week, and we're chatting and saying, I mean, would it be the unlikeliest title win, you know, in Scottish football history? Possibly. I don't. Or Wim Jansen, maybe. He's no stopping Rangers winning 10 in a row. I mean, he came in and there was, you know, I think actually Celtic lost their first two games that season, if I'm right in saying. And Rangers had signed Marco Negri. He scored 5 in one of their first. So everything pointed to a Rangers win that season. That would probably match it. But maybe the fact that Clement came in, you know, later in the season, he had less games to make it up. So possibly that is a bigger shock. I don't know. It's got to be up there.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, as much as Diamandi got the goal yesterday, I mean, largely this has been done with the same group of players that Michael Beale was operating. As I say, these same group of players that we're all looking at going, you know, this has been a disastrous summer window. They're not good enough. They're not going to be good enough to mount a title. And, you know, it's just been, as I say, an incredible turnaround. The fact that Felipe Clement has come in and got these same players, you know, like Sadesers. I mean, I think we all heard fans discussing whether or not, I think we might even discussed it, whether or not a Cyril Dessers or a Sam Lammers were the worst ever signings. The club, obviously, Lammers has moved on. But Dessers, as much as he had a pretty difficult day yesterday, has played his part. You know, he's now, I think it's 11 goals in 22 games under the new manager. Mm-hmm. A goal every other game. You know, he scored a big goal in Europe against Betis, obviously. You know, I said to a friend yesterday, you know, you're looking at, you know, if he scores a goal in an Old Firm game, then you're sitting there going, in terms of his strike record and his strike rate and the high-profile games, then you're sitting there pretty much a ticked all the boxes that you'd be looking for a Rangers striker when he comes in the summer. Obviously, we saw him during the early parts of the season when they looked miles off it, let's be frank. But, you know, if he can, you know, cut out, start taking a few more of the chances, the ones that he wasted yesterday, I maybe takes one in an Old Firm game, then I don't think MD can sit there and complain about the way that Cyril Dessers' first season's going. So, you know, it really just has a remarkable, remarkable turnaround.
Yeah. And the challenge now, Andy, is, I mean, it is remarkable what they've done. You're absolutely right. But there is a different challenge, you know, when you're the one being hunted rather than the hunters. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have to rise to this psychological. It really becomes a 12-game season now, doesn't it? That's it. It's now a 12-game season from here on in, and you just have to get to the finish line. But what a chance on Saturday. But another tough game, you know, home to Hearts. You know, it was a last-minute winner the last time Hearts came to Ibrox. One goal between the sides at Tynecastle. But what a chance to go 5 points clear with Celtic going to Motherwell the next day. I mean, that is huge. But, you know, they want to kick on, don't they? Now they're top. Now it's.
You talk about pressure, different game. There was pressure on the team, as you say, walking out McDermott on Saturday, because the expectation with Celtic slipping up the day before meant that the team had to go out and perform. A wee bit like, you know, it's been like that way with the midweek game against Gross County. You know, there was that expectation that if they could get the four goals or the three goal margin of victory, that they would go top, and they couldn't quite do that. And I think some people suggested, or that was a sign that, you know, the mentality wasn't quite right, or maybe again was this a crack, the first sort of crack that they couldn't, you know, there was an opportunity to go there top. But listen, Felipe Clement is absolutely right. You know, we know the sort of buzzwords he uses, like, you know, it's not a marathon, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. But we're now into, as you say, the sort of final stretch of that. But, you know, it's not where, it doesn't matter where you are in February, it's where you are in March in terms of the table, in terms of the table that matters the most. So, you know, he won't allow the team to get bogged down in these, you know, slight ups and downs that the team are going to get. You know, there's going to be bumps in the road, there's going to be ups and downs, and he's going to make sure they stay level-headed. And, you know, so far, it's got them back, as I say, into a position nobody could have expected. So, listen, I mean, you're now looking at going, if they don't win the league this season, is this a disappointing campaign? You know, if you were, say, you know, back in October, if Rangers were to miss out in the title by a point or two, would that be a bad season for where they've been? But now you're looking here, the expectation levels have just risen so dramatically on top of this team. So, you know, there's going to be different pressures and they're going to have to deal with that. But that's what the name of the game is from now until May.
I said exactly that to Scott last week. I said, I mean, if they lose that, but if they lost out the title by a point, I mean, given everything that had gone on and what Clement inherited, you know, I mean, you couldn't be critical of him, but you wouldn't be able to hide that disappointment. Because the flip side is, if you look across the city, the way Celtic are talking, the Celtic fans are, that even if Brendan Rodgers wins the league, because of everything that's happened with them, they're almost saying they would want him to go anyway. Just that's the difference in the expectations. He inherited a treble winning team, so his starting point was obviously much greater than what Rangers was. So that's why they're looking at it differently.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's how these narratives flip, isn't it? And just on, you know, as you say, these ups and downs that you go through in a season. So, you know, as I say, you know, Rangers can't allow themselves to get bogged down in this sort of week-to-week, you know, ups and downs, you know, fluctuations and confidence and the narrative shifts. That they need to just try and keep themselves in an even keel, but they've been very good at that, and I fully expect them to continue riding out that quite well. I mean, it's going to get tougher. You know, they've got European games to deal with in a way that the Celtic don't. But I think the thing that's impressed me so much about this team is just the fact that, you know, I think I counted that it's 29 players Philippe Clement's made use of since he came in. Mm-hmm. You know, he makes 5 changes at the weekend. He makes 7 changes against Ross County. He makes 7 changes to the lineup before the Ayr United. And pretty much performances, results stay the same. Doesn't matter who comes in. He's really found a way to get the guys that aren't playing. He's keeping them involved, obviously. And he's managing to do it in such a way that doesn't affect performance and results. So that in itself is just, you know, a real sort of masterstroke of management, because, you know, we saw at early points this season, there was just guys that Michael Beale couldn't trust or couldn't rely on to get results and get performances. And yet, Philippe Clement's done that. So, you know, as I say, 12 games to go. They need to keep doing that until the end of the season. If they can do that, as you said yesterday, it can be a really special season.
Yeah. And on the morning of the game, Andy, Philippe Clement in his press conference with the Sunday newspapers had talked about the money he'd, about developing players and the money he brought in at former clubs. I think Genk was Sander Berge, £22 million he was sold for. Leandro Trossard sold to Brighton for 13 million, then went to Arsenal for 20. Noah Lang, PSV. So that was three examples, 14 million he eventually moved on for. And talking about how, you know, given the time, that's what he would, you know, be hoping to do with Rangers. Then a few hours later, we see Mohamed Diamande, first start, scorching goal for the opener. £4.5 million at the time. A lot of people maybe raised their eyebrows at spending that kind of money and for a position they didn't feel was a priority. Did you see on Sunday why they spent that kind of money? And could he be sold on for big money in the years to come?
If he keeps up, he's you know, you've only seen, as I say, very small glimpses of him. Obviously, started at the weekend, scored a great goal. Before that, he'd come on a couple of times. I think he started against Ayr as well. So we haven't seen much of him, but the early signs are encouraging. He's got a sort of Glenn Kamara feel to him about me, for me. The way he controls the ball, the way he can open up space, the way he can, you know, just sort of run a midfield. So for me, he's been a really encouraging start. I mean, it's encouraging as well that this is him. He's still not up to speed. You know, I don't think he played a game since November when he first came in. So, you know, I'm sure they'll feel that they can get more out of him physically in terms of fitness aspects. So, you know, the more he gets used to this team, the more we'll see from him. You know, Cortez, I don't think it was a game for him especially yesterday. I think it was interesting to see him linking up with Barisic yesterday. I didn't think they had the greatest connection. I think there's the sort of bond between Cortez and Yilmaz has looked a bit more promising in the few times we've seen the two of them working down that left-hand side. But, you know, the fact is that they've got these couple of extra guys coming in that'll just give that extra bit of boost, that extra bit of competition. And, you know, that's what you want when you're going for a title. You want everybody to be sort of champing a bit, desperate to play. And you, as I say, you know, all these changes that get made week after week and the results stay the same, that'll be music to Philip Clement's ears. He'll be delighted to see these guys week after week playing so well.
Good, Andy. As we're talking here, I just see it flashing up on my phone, a journalist saying they understand Michael Beale set to leave his post at Sunderland. Oh, just shows you how things change, doesn't it? My God, we're talking about Clement, the man at the play. Seems so long ago now.
There was some whispers in the rounds last night. I mean, you've got a feel for Michael Beale. I mean, he's not had it easy down there. You know, obviously the Sunderland fans were sort of loath to lose Tony Mowbray. You know, of course, we've just heard today he's going to be taking some time out from Birmingham because of illness. They were loath to see him leave. They didn't really like the idea of Michael Beale for everything they heard from the Rangers support. And then he's gone in there and results just haven't picked up. And, you know, that is seems that things are all coming on top for him, unfortunately. So,
that's going to be the end, you would think, of his, you know, I mean, he's going to struggle to get a job after that, to lose two so quickly. Yeah. He's not going to get it again at that level.
Yeah, certainly this level. I mean, the surprising thing for me is because, you know, we all remember back to the Steven Gerrard days and just how highly everyone spoke of Michael Beale as a coach, as a guy working on the grass on the training ground. Mm-hmm. He was innovative, he was, you know, insightful, he was covered all the details. That's not us saying that, that's the players that have worked with him, the other coaches that have worked with him, they all spoke so highly about him. So it's just been a surprise that it's not sort of, you know, manifested in terms of a management career. But I suppose it shows you that there is more to management than just putting on a good training session. You know, you've got to deal with all the personal aspects of it. And I think we saw at times with Michael Beale that, you know, in terms of maybe that man-to-man management side of things, that's maybe where he probably wasn't at his best. I even saw the clip at the weekend where he substitutes one of his players and the player goes to offer a handshake. And I've seen his Instagram statement. He says he didn't see him. But again, just from a body language point of view, it just doesn't look good. And, you know, even for our own dealings with him, you know, I find it hard to get my head around the idea of him being able to relay a consistent message to players, because so often we would ask him things and the narrative would change from over the course of 2 or 3 weeks. You'd ask him the same question, you'd get different answers. So I can imagine that might have had an impact in how the players saw things. So it looks like he's going to have some really serious thoughts about where he goes from here, if this is the end for him at the Stadium of Light.
Yeah. Now, sorry, to go back to Diamande, you were just talking about the value of him. Very early impression, looks good. I was going to say that I thought, you know, he's not low, he's not the biggest physically, you know. He was very aggressive. He was more aggressive than I thought, you know. He's
quite wiry, isn't he? I mean, even just you saw the clips of him celebrating the goal, and there's a one where he sort of runs towards the camera, and you're like, he's not much to him, you know. He's well, like, it's like a 5-2 note, isn't he? I mean,
it's still quite solid. It's fine that he was still that. I think that was what's kind of surprised me most. But he seems to have a good all round game. But what I was going to ask you is, I mean, it's getting really congested in there in terms of, you know, for places. We'll go into John Sterling in a minute, but I mean, when you think of Nico Raskin coming in last January, I mean, he was the guy along coming in with Cantwell. You know, they were saying these are the two signings that show, you know, the future's bright under Michael Beale, because Raskin started well, but he's kind of dipped, hasn't he, recently, and now there's a competition. He seems to have kind of gone off the radar a wee bit.
Yeah, and it's obviously had that injury. I think he did his ankle that last game against Hearts. Sort of went over his ankle taking a shot, and that sort of, you know, that was a time when Clement just came in, and you know, a lot of players were responding to the new manager up in their levels, and then he's come in, and you know, obviously it takes you time when you have an injury of that nature, that it takes you time to get back up. And I think what we've seen from Clement is that as much as he'll, you know, give players chances, he'll rotate you in and out, but if you're not playing well, then you're not going to get the opportunities. That's now a couple of games we've seen where he's not started and not even come on. So, I think we all thought, given the sort of Belgian connection, that this would maybe work in Nico Raskin's favour, and it's not really turned out like that. So, but you know, listen, the guy, he was so highly rated when he was back at Stade Liège, and you know, yeah, I think given time, it's just going to be difficult because as we've seen, he is rotating so much, the manager, that it doesn't really give you that chance to play yourself way back into form. You know, there's so many prizes to be won for that. Clement can't afford to let somebody sort of stay in the team and not be at their peak. You know, there's maybe a couple of positions he has to do that, you know, up front, really, you know, at times when it's just been Dessers he's had available before Fabio Silva came in. So, but now there's options all over the park, and if you're not playing well, then you don't play. I mean, that's been the clear message from the manager. I think there's been times, you know, start of the season, like Sam Lammers would play week after week under Beale when everyone could see that he wasn't up to the required standard. As soon as Rangers got the bodies in, as soon as the guys came back for injury, you know, Sam Lammers was out the team and then out the door back to Holland. So, you know, that if Raskin wants back in, he's going to have to earn his way, and he's going to have to perform consistently well for me to be back playing regularly.
Yeah, but I mean, one guy who really impressed, he came on yesterday, was Dujon Sterling. I know he missed that close range header, which he really should have scored. Did win the penalty, but his versatility has been so crucial to Rangers playing that. Anyway, I noticed a few shouts on social media saying player of the year. Rangers, but I mean, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, how impressed have you been with him? Is it that ridiculous to shout about for player of the year, or?
Oh, no, I think there's a few contenders ahead of him. For me, Jack Butland's the player of the year. I think he likes a lunch from Tavernier. Maybe even Todd Cantwell now and again, sort of the way he's performing. So,
okay, so you shot that right down. So,
that's a nonsense, Gav. I don't know
who told that. Okay, but he's versatile.
It's one of his remarkable turnarounds because, you know, when he came in again, he was highly rated. People we spoke to down south talked him up and said, you know, it's a guy's terrific form. You know, he can play anywhere. But I didn't expect to actually see him literally playing everywhere. I mean, I think Clement's actually spoken saying, you know, the only place he can't play is goalkeeper. But I mean, like, you know, he came in, he played left. I remember one of his first appearances under Clement was he came on and played left back at Tynecastle. He's played right back a couple of times. He's played, he then has to go into midfield, plays midfield in Old Firm game and was terrific. And then we were out in La Manga for the winter break and they played him right wing against Hertha Berlin. I thought, I'm not sure that's his most natural position, but fair, you know. Fair play. He comes on and plays there on Sunday and looks an absolute natural. And, you know, obviously wins a penalty, you know, solid performance. Just that, again, it's just that physicality and that tenacity to win the ball. And technically as well, I think I'm not sure he gets enough credit for his technical ability. I think his range of passing is terrific. I think his ability to turn in the ball and work with the ball is impressive as well. So I think this is a guy, I think this is, it's that old, adage about, being a sort of, a utility player and what's the phrase? Jack of all trades, master of none. I mean, I think I look at him and go, for him to play regularly, he really should be looking to nail down one regular slot. Yeah. But he just fills so many holes that I think that might.
So he's going to be a victim of that. It's going to work against
him. He just ends up getting sort of dotted about the place rather than just nailing down one place. But so far, you've got to say he hasn't let down Rangers in any time, and no matter what position he's been put in. So.
Yeah. And just finally, Fabio Silva, how impressed have you been with him? What is your take on him? Seems to be that he's not, but I think we know that, though. He's not a number nine. And this was, Rangers fans were crying out for a striker during the window, that Shankland type. And, some people were saying, they've gone out and bought one, Fabio Silva, but he's not, he's more of a sort of number 10, isn't he? Or maybe, do you think you'd be better playing him wider and still giving Dessers a run through the middle? Is that an option or what?
Potentially. I mean, I think what's clear is you saw even just the weekend there that Dessers comes on. Obviously, it's late in the game and St. Johnstone were tiring, but Dessers just gets himself umpteen sort of scoring positions. Doesn't take any of them, and that'll be the frustration for him. I think we've just got to accept he can be a bit erratic in front of goal, but he gets himself on the end of these chances, whereas in a way that Silva doesn't. Silva just seems to float more. He wants to link up. He wants to come deeper, whereas Dessel's always on the last man, always looking to do the running behind. And, they're just two different type of players, and there's going to be games that will work, like we saw. Try to think back to, was it the Aberdeen game where Silva came on? And it was him just basically sort of coming in and dropping deep that sort of opened up the space for others to go beyond him. And that's what kind of made the difference in terms of Rangers being able to get the victory that at that point sort of moved them close to Celtic at that point. So, for me, it's a, there are going to be occasions where one player will be the preferred option over the other. That just seems to be the way Clement is doing it. As long as he keeps getting the kind of results he's getting so far, he'll be pleased with that.
Great, Andy. Well, listen, thanks a lot, but I won't let you go without telling me who you would like in Friday's draw for Europa League last 16. A big day on Friday, obviously. Always huge excitement around about that. Have you had a look at teams? Did you look at the knockout playoff?
I had a week look. Obviously, I was hoping to avoid Braga, given I've been there twice before. Carabag are 4-2 up, so... That's quite an exotic location. I wouldn't mind a wee trip out there and see what that's all about. I think the San Siro's got to be the top. There's a talk about that. They're going to demolish it. Is that still the talk?
I read that, yeah.
I don't know if the plans have been put on hold, but if that is the case, then I'd certainly like to go. I've not been to San Siro before, so I'd like to go and have a wee look at that before it.
Istanbul, Galatasaray,
Lisbon as well. There's plenty of nice trips in there for the fans, as I'm sure they'll be. Wherever it ends up, they'll enjoy themselves, especially if the team keep playing the way they are.
Yeah, but there's a few crackers. Benfica, Marseille, Roma, Feyenoord, poised at one each. It's going to be a cracker. It seems so long ago, doesn't it, that Betis game seems so long ago, obviously skipping around, so they had the benefit of that, going straight into the last 16, but it's just good to get the juices flowing again when it comes to Europe. There's always that great bit of excitement, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be, as I say, a huge second half to the season. And I think that the thing that'll just, be so exciting for the punters is that, now it's they've got something to be excited about. They've got something to be optimistic about because, as you say, as you go back to October, it just looks so bleak for this Rangers team. And as I said earlier on, what a remarkable turnaround, and they can now go into these games. Even even if the European campaign was to sort of fizzle out, they know that domestically they're right back in the fight, and that's what they could ask for, as I say, 4 months ago.
Brilliant, great, so much to look forward to in this remaining months of the season. You can keep up to date with it all on the Daily Record. Read up. Andy will bring you all the latest from Rangers. And check it out online as well on dailyrecord.co.uk. Andy, thanks a lot. And we'll hopefully catch up again next week.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers.